Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Loads of highlights to get through today. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by just Stevie Nicol today. But fear not, Julien Laurent joins us as well to give us his expert insight. We'll start in the Premier League. Liverpool in action against Bournemouth at Anfield. Liverpool, of course, bit of a poor run coming into this game. They find themselves 1-0 down after 9 minutes. I think many expected this goal to be chalked off, but in the end, it was given to Callum Wilson.
Well, it is a foul, but, I mean, they work it well. Good overlap from the fullback, but that's just ridiculous. How anybody cannot give a foul for that is beyond me. But they did take the goal well.
It wouldn't have huge significance on the result because in the end Liverpool would win this game. The equaliser coming from Mohamed Salah despite a terrible ball from Mane.
Yeah, I mean it looked as though it was all over, but Salah gets it between the defender's legs and in the bottom corner. And then a lovely ball from Van Dijk, and that he made that look so, so simple, Mane. And at 2-1, it was better, but it was still a little nervy.
James Milner in for Robertson and makes a great goal line clearance here.
Huge. That's a huge clearance off the line.
So it finishes at Liverpool 2, Bournemouth 1. As I mentioned, going into the game, Liverpool had had their worst run of the season, losing, what, 3 of their last 4 matches. Jurgen Klopp was asked about that mini slump after the game.
There's nothing good in losing football games, but it makes you aware of how special it is to win football games. And now we have 3 days, 4 days time to prepare for another very difficult game in a wonderful stadium with a sensational crowd. That was, I think, the best 12:30 performance of our crowd since I'm here. I loved it. And so let's make sure that we are ready for that.
Well, Liverpool's opponents in the Champions League were also in action today. Atletico Madrid taking on Sevilla. It's a lively first half. Not something you can say very often about Atleti. 19 minutes into this one, Luke de Jong makes it 1-0 to Sevilla.
Well, the defender just completely gambles, misses it, and then what a super finish from de Jong.
Now, 8 minutes later, it looked like João Félix was brought down. However, no penalty was given. VAR, though, would intervene. The referee reviews it. And here, the penalty's awarded. Steve, you right, Joyce?
I'm not sure, no. I think he kicks the defender as he's attempting to get the ball.
Well, Morata steps up to make it 1-1.
Good finish. That's how you take a penalty.
10 minutes later, Atleti take the lead. Koke plays it into João Félix. His deflected effort finds the back of the net.
Yeah, it's a good solid bit of play. It gets a little fortunate, it takes a neck and goes over the top of the keeper, but from their point of view, they're getting numbers forward and scoring goals.
Right, concentrate here. Goal line clearance, nicely done by Oblak initially. But here appeals for a penalty. And in the end, Ocampos is brought down. So there's the save from Oblak. That's okay. Didn't cross the line. But a foul would be given here, which wasn't given initially. Trippier with a foul. Penalty.
Yep.
Ocampos steps up. 2-2.
Yeah, they got that one right. No question. Trippier caught him. And again, good penalty kick.
So, that's how it finishes in the Spanish capital. Remember when it was the first leg against Liverpool, Atleti won by 1-0. This is interesting. According to the bookies, Atletico Madrid are favourites to make it into the quarter-final. This, of course, is the first opportunity we've had a chance to talk to you, Stevie, since that injury to Alisson was announced.
Yep.
Adrian hasn't exactly set the world on fire, was at fault for the goal in the FA Cup. Yep. Again today, he didn't look very comfortable, did he?
No.
How much of a game changer is that, going into that Champions League tie at Anfield?
Listen, it's definitely a game changer. Is it a game changer enough that Atletico are going into this as favourites? I'm not quite sure. I think there's not a lot in it, but I would certainly think Liverpool being at home with only a 1-goal deficit should be favourites. Now, your argument about Adrian is absolutely glaring, to be honest. Shocking goal in midweek. And you talk about looking nervous. at Anfield against Bournemouth, and you look completely rusty and not with it at all. And actually, if you look at Liverpool's defence overall, even with Alisson recently, they're giving up chances and giving up goals. So that is definitely going to be the key.
And remember, if Atleti score one, Liverpool need to score three.
I don't think scoring goals is going to be Liverpool's problem.
It was so in Madrid, wasn't it?
Oh, it was in Madrid. No question. Didn't even get a shot on target. However, this is a different ball game at Anfield. There's no way that happens at Anfield. There's no way they don't get chances. And there's no way that they won't score.
Mm.
The worry, in fact, is Adrian.
Yeah.
And the way the back four are given opportunities up.
Adrian, Jules, it's obvious, is a clear Achilles heel to this Liverpool side and their hopes of advancing.
Yes, you're right. And that injury to Alisson that Klopp announced on Friday, that happened at training, was really, it's the worst time. I mean, it's never a good time to lose Alisson, but even less, what, 4 or 5 days before such a big game in Liverpool season. And you're right, Adrian, from what we saw against Chelsea, from what we saw today again, is an issue, is a problem there. And the biggest issue for me is that you know very well that on Wednesday, Atletico Madrid will probably have one chance, maybe two, because I think it will be that kind of game where Atletico will defend a lot and maybe will hit on the counter-attack and we'll have... So Adrian might have just one save to make, and it's the kind of save that Alisson has been so good at. He has one thing to do in the game and he makes it perfect, and that's a clean sheet and it's a win for Liverpool or something like that. I'm really not sure that Adrian has that in him, has that talent to be able to just be there on the only one time that he'd be needed in a game like that.
Meanwhile, of course, Barcelona in action today, taking on Real Sociedad at the Camp Nou. Barca looking to bounce back after that defeat against Real Madrid in the Clásico. Luis Suarez in the stands watching this one. Not much happened really in this game. 5 minutes into the 5 minutes ago in the first half, Lionel Messi with a chance puts it wide, and then Messi here gets a yellow card for this challenge. Could it have been red, Stephen?
No, I don't think it's red. It's late, yes. And he's actually turned away. He's tried to pull out a little bit in the end as well.
Into the second half we go. Rakitic with the opportunity.
It's a good strike, but really he shouldn't be scoring from there against a keeper of this quality. I mean, he's not got a lot to shoot at. It's a good save.
It would be a big call late on from the officials. 30 minutes to go. Nothing was given originally. However, VAR would tell the referee to go and look at the monitor to see whether or not it was a handball in the box.
100%. No question. Handball. Defender turns his head away. Doesn't even look at the ball. Shoves his arm out and it comes off it. Penalty kick all day long. And I'm glad some VAR get it right.
Penalty then given. Lionel Messi steps up and makes it 1-0.
Do you know what? Hey, if you scored from a penalty, it's got to be a good penalty, right? But I didn't like it.
Nacho Monreal brought down here. Could this have been a penalty, Stevie?
I don't think it's a penalty kick. Monreal, 100% for me, is waiting for any sort of touch to go down, and down he goes.
So not exactly overwhelming from Barcelona, but they get the job done at the Camp Nou, beating Real Sociedad by 1-0. And what that means regarding La Liga, it means for the moment they are 2 points clear at the top of the table ahead of Real Madrid, of course, in action later this weekend. Jules, we heard what Stevie had to say about the handball decision. Do you agree with him?
I thought it was really, really harsh. And the fact that no one appeals, if you look at the replay and the action, no player from Barcelona really appealed the handball. And I think it's harsh. I think Lenormand goes in because Longley is ahead of him. I'm not sure he really sees the ball. He goes for it. And it's really unfortunate. I can see why it went to VAR, and then with all the replays, you could see why the ref has given it, but I thought it was really harsh. At that time of the game as well, 80th minute or 79th minute, I thought it was really harsh to be given that.
Peter Walton, friend of the show, Stevie, said, it's harsh as well. Clearly not deliberate. Coming over the head of the forward, ball strikes the arm. Arm doesn't go towards the ball.
There's the last piece I don't agree with at all. When he says the arm doesn't go towards the ball, when your arm's there, when you start running, your arm's down here. So when he goes for the challenge and he lifts his arm, turns his head, doesn't look at the ball, and it hits his arm, which is away from his body, which is probably the biggest criteria that referees look at these days, then it's a penalty kick.
That penalty proved to be decisive because Barcelona were labouring to make any sort of breakthrough in this game. And you look at their results under Quique Setién, of course, brought in, replaced Valverde, looking to bring Barcelona back to their glory days and really get them going. But over recent weeks, you know, obviously there are exceptions, a 5-0 win against Eibar. But Jules, there's something about this Barcelona team that you feel that still isn't quite right, which is weird because we're talking about a team, let's not forget, who for the moment are top of La Liga.
Yes, but you're absolutely right. There's still something not clicking since Quique Setién took over. Obviously, the injuries are not helping, and the fact that Suarez and Dembele, for example, have those long-term injuries, which means that they're a bit light up front, and Martin Braithwaite had to be signed and then started the game today. Not that he did badly, because I thought he brought a lot of energy in that first half. There was some good movement from him. Second half, he disappeared completely, but you can still feel that it's not really what Quique Setién wants. I'm not sure he really has the players right now to play the football that he wants. We saw his assistant, Eder Sarabia, losing it really in the Clásico and going mad on the touchline a lot. And the players today have said, like, yeah, that's normal. You know, no one is angry with him. That's the way he lives football. He's very animated, very shouts a lot and moves a lot. Fair enough. But he still showed, I mean, I thought it was a lot of frustration from that bench in the Clásico. And even Setién was not happy a lot of the time of what his players were doing. So there's still clearly a lot of work to do. But the fact that they're top of the La Liga without even, playing 60% of their best under Setién is probably the only good thing right now for Barcelona.
Jules, you were the harshest critics of Valverde. You were more than happy to see him go. But isn't it true that he would probably still be in the same position even if he was still in charge?
Maybe. I mean, we will never know. Maybe not. They might have dropped more points, especially away from home, where under Valverde, he was a real struggle. Not that he's much, much better than the Setién away from home. But I just never thought under Valverde that there was a direction, an idea that this team was going somewhere. Setién has an idea, and right now he's working on trying to get there. And yet, like we said, there's a lot of work to be done. Let's not forget that Setién was not the first choice or second or even third choice to replace Valverde. So they had to go with him, even if he was not really the guy they wanted in the first place. But at least you know what he's trying to do, and you can see at times what he's trying to do. But the fact that he's struggling, like the team was struggling under Valverde, that's true.
What's the one problem, Stevie, that is fixable between now and the end of the season with the personnel that you have?
I don't think it's fixable.
Really?
There's no chemistry in this team. I mean, there really isn't. You know, we used to watch Barcelona, and from back middle to front, it was smooth, accurate, pacey passing and movement and connections.
Yeah.
This team has none of that. You're worried when they're passing it out the back. They're average in the middle. I mean, to call Frankie de Jong average seems crazy, but he's done not a lot since he's gone there. And the front three, and particularly Griezmann, Griezmann looks like an ordinary football player playing for Barcelona. So you're basically looking at Messi. You know, and the reason the top of the league is because every now and again, one of them can produce something. Usually it's Messi. And they do put teams under pressure, but putting them under pressure and actually creating or having any imagination in the final third is missing. And I mean, I almost said that that's why the Lucas are struggling, but they're struggling at the top of the league.
I know, it's strange, isn't it? Of course, they are out of the Copa del Rey. Sidlow is very excited about the final this year. Find out why by checking out his article over on the website.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
To Germany we go. The big game, no doubt about it. Borussia Mönchengladbach taking on Borussia Dortmund. It would take just 8 minutes for the visitors to take the lead. This is all about Thorgan Hazard. It looked like he mucked up the opportunity. Does brilliantly here, though, with a turn. It's a lovely finish.
Well, his first touch is horrible. It takes him away from goal. He's got a three-man defence with Posse chasing after him and one quick Cruyff turn. And then shoves it in the bottom corner.
5 minutes into the second half, though, Gladbach get the equaliser. Lars Stindl from close range.
Well, the ball's just thrown to the back post. It's volleyed back across the six-yard box. Not even on target. And Stindl just hanging around there. Puts it home through the legs of Haaland.
It looked like Hazard was going to get his second of the game, but from a brilliant save from Jan Sommer.
Wow. Do you know what? The header just can't be any better. Kept low, it's into the ground, but the keeper, absolutely phenomenal.
However, Sommer would be beaten 7 minutes later, thanks to Hakimi.
Well, Hakimi's first touch is good, his second one's a donkey touch. Right there, I think the keeper's going to get out there and smother it, but change of pace and he puts it home.
11 minutes to go, Jadon Sancho looking to seal the 3 points, denied though by the woodwork.
Well, he's gone for the right shot, the top corner's open, just unfortunately thickness of the woodwork keeps it out.
Wouldn't matter though, Borussia Dortmund with an impressive win away from home. Just taking a look at how that affects their standings in the Bundesliga. They are now just 1 point off Bayern Munich at the top of the table. Next up for Dortmund, it's a little matter of that Champions League knockout stage match against PSG. Remember, it finished 2-1 to Dortmund in the first leg. Despite that fact though, PSG with a home advantage, favourites to advance to the next stage. Ah, oh, Jules, PSG, knockout stages, Champions League. No pride, don't know why they even bother the match.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they do in their sleep, you know, qualifying in games like this, then going far in the competition. It's not like if you had a couple of remontada in the last 4 or 5 years, a few times where they bottled it as well, and they can go into this game very, very confident, the Parisians.
This is trouble, isn't it, Jules? You've got to be concerned.
Oh, man. I'm glad I will be at Liverpool for French television, and I don't even want to watch the PSG Dortmund game. I'm far too stressed already, because on one hand, you've got a team in Dortmund that have really hit their form now, and you saw the what Emre Can has brought to that team since arriving at the club, what Erling Haaland as well, obviously, but we expected that more maybe than Emre Can. Jadon Sancho was on the bench today because I don't think he was very well, but he came on after an hour, made a huge difference straight away. Hakimi is on top form as well. And they've got that momentum and that confidence. On the other hand, in Paris, it's a team that is not playing well right now. There's a bit of tension still with Tuchel in his dressing room. Neymar is not in the form that he was before his injury at the beginning of February. And yes, they won, for example, in midweek at Lyon 5-1 with the Mbappe hat-trick. But collectively, it was not fluid. It was not very good. They didn't play today, this weekend, because their game was postponed in Strasbourg because of the coronavirus. I'm not sure if that's a good thing to have the weekend off, a bad thing. But I think, although they say they're confident, I think they can be worried about that game, even if it's in Paris.
For a lot more on that, of course, Gab and Jules podcast, as always, available over on the website. Back to the late game then in the Premier League. Burnley taking on Spurs. Burnley would take the lead in the 13th minute. You can just see here in the build-up, handball there. However, because the ball is cleared here, it is then a new phase. The shot comes in. Chris Wood on the rebound makes it 1-0.
Well, it's all nonsense. At the end of the day, the ball's in the back of the net. And it's in the back of the net because, for me, Lloris has to do better there. Listen, you either save it or you put it wide.
3 minutes into the second half, penalty awarded. No doubt about this one, Steve.
Yeah, bad decision from me. In his own penalty area, completely gambles and loses that gamble, gives the penalty away.
Dele Alli converts a penalty. Yep. Thank you very much. That'll be it. More drop points then for Jose Mourinho's side. But what happened on the pitch isn't really what's making all the headlines. It is Jose Mourinho's comments about Ndombele after the game.
And I have to say that Tanguy had enough time to come to a different level. I know that the Premier League is very difficult. I know that some players, it takes time. Some players, they take a long time to adapt to a different league. But a player with his potential, with his responsibility, I think he has to give us more than he's giving us.
Is that fair, Jules?
I don't think it is. I mean, listen, I'm biased, obviously, but yes, Tanguy Ndombele should do better, and I've watched him play a lot this season. I know him well, in his attitude, in his movement, his work rate off the ball, on the ball. There's a lot of things to improve. He's 23 years of age. 4 years ago, he was playing the French fifth division. So I think Mourinho should cut him some slack to start with, and maybe Mourinho should start thinking the potential is there, because even Mourinho says he's got great potential. Maybe I should work a bit differently with him, because for all I know, he's a slow learner, maybe, or like for what I've just said, the reason I've just said, this is all new to him. He had one season in the French top flight, he had a few call-ups with France, and then he arrived in the Premier League in a club that is dysfunctional right now, let's be honest. He has had two managers, the first one signed him and then left, and the second one was, well, let's be honest, never really that kind with him. It's not the first time that he shames him in public, in front of the media, when I think there's no reason to shame him. Of course, Ndombele should do better, but I think Mourinho should treat him very, very differently, especially publicly in front of the media.
Stevie?
I find it shocking that a manager hangs a player out to dry in that manner. Listen, if somebody has the wrong attitude, if somebody clearly doesn't care, then that's a different ballgame. But when you're 23 years of age, you've just come from a league that's way lower than the Premier League. It's a completely different way of playing. It's dysfunctional, as Jules says. And you've got the cheek to kind of put the blame on this kid. I mean, any coach that hangs a player out to dry in the press, in my opinion, is an absolute disgrace.
$65 million, though, they paid for him. You know, he's got a big price tag. The expectation was high.
I don't care who it is or how much they were bought for. You do this behind closed doors. If you've got a problem with a player and you think he should be doing better, you take him in your office. Or you get somebody to work with him and talk to him. I mean, all he's doing is alienating himself, Mourinho, because if I'm a player in that team, I'm thinking, wow, I'll tell you what, if he's going to do this to him, is he going to do it to anybody? I mean, what sort of way is that to go into training or go into games? He's just to alienate himself.
You compare Jose Mourinho's record from 2019-2020. It's interesting, obviously, the run of defeats and the run of drop points continues for them. But Jules, what's happened to Mourinho in that this isn't a surprise that yet again he's throwing a player under the bus? We saw it at Manchester United with Paul Pogba, with Luke Shaw. In contrast to the Jose Mourinho, you always think back to that Inter Milan side, the Chelsea teams, where the team, where they were genuinely gutted, in tears, when he left.
Yeah, I just don't think he has that kind of relationship with his dressing room anymore. I just don't think there's that chemistry between him and the dressing room. At the start, at Spurs, yeah, there was a lot of smiles and he was making those jokes. Oh, but is it Dele Alli's brother who's playing? I want the real Dele Alli to play. And then Dele had a few good games and then suddenly it was all good. And then now he's back to the old Mourinho, the one that we've been used to it now for many years. The one who is very critical publicly of his players, like we've just explained. The one whose team is not playing well, with no direction, with no idea, with no creativity. He will always hide himself behind the fact that he's got injured. And he said it again today after the game. Oh, but, you know, I need players to do the things I want to do. And next season will be different. And you know, my real time here starts on July the 1st, 2020. Well, no, it doesn't. You've been here long enough now to show us better things than what you have. Even without Kane and Son, I don't care. You had all of January to sign someone up front to play as a centre forward. You failed. You signed Bergwijn, who's a wide player that you can play as a second striker or a striker. But that's not the answer. And I've had enough of all those excuses. It's never his fault. It's never been his fault. And now Spurs are stagnating, let's be honest, to say the least. And again, it's not his fault. It's always someone else's fault. And in this case, it's Ndombele's fault.
Spurs now, by the way, just 1 point ahead of Arsenal, who managed a 1-0 victory at home today against West Ham. Now, history made in the Southampton-Newcastle game today. Moussa Djenepo was initially given a yellow card by the referee. He was told by the VAR officials to go and check the monitor. He would do that and he would change his mind, turn the yellow to a red.
Good decision. The red card all day long.
That's what we've been crying out here on the show in particular, isn't it? Go over to the monitor.
How simple was that?
Yeah.
And it's good that it's the right decision as well. I mean, so easy, so simple, and more importantly, quick.
Jules, they're almost proving us right, aren't they? And themselves wrong and stubborn in that this works so well this time.
Yeah, what date are we today? March the...
It was only March 7th.
Taken them 7 months, to be fair. So, you know, in the end, it happened, and let's hope that it will happen again. That's the most important, because if that's the only time they do it, and you saw, like, exactly like Stevie said, it was quick, it was simple, it was efficient, and it worked. And again, it was a no-brainer from the beginning that was missing in the way they were implementing VAR. Now that they've done it once, let's hope that they can do it more regularly or just when it's needed, and it's often needed. But it was that good today that hopefully they will follow that example again.
Newcastle would go on to win the game by 1-0, a significant victory for Bruce's side, lifting them up to 13th in the table above Southampton. Meanwhile, Norwich in real trouble, aren't they, losing today at the bottom? They're joined at the moment by Aston Villa and Bournemouth in the relegation zone. Full programme of Italian matches for you over the next 48 hours, no doubt, where the big one is, though. In Turin, Juventus taking on Inter Milan. That is live here on ESPN Plus at 3:45 Eastern. A couple of front pages to get you excited about it. Gazzetta going with it's a chess match. Of course, these two coaches going head-to-head. And meanwhile, Corriere Sport reminds us that this game will be held behind closed doors. We'll get the boys' views on it in a moment. Let's just remind you, by the way, our boys are regular contributors to the Daily Wager, giving you some hot tips about where you should be putting your money on that vein. Let's go for it then, Stevie. Juve against Inter Milan. Juve favourites going into this.
Listen, if had there been a crowd, I would say Juve are favourites as well.
Right.
I think this has got a draw written all over it. Because there's no crowd, it's all about concentration and professionalism. Juventus, you talk about a team that does that.
Yep.
And of course, there's no way Conte is going to let his team do anything other than those two things. I just see this as a stale, cancelling each other out draw.
Julian?
I hear what Stevie says. I still think that Juve will win this game. This is the kind of game where they have to step up, where they have to play better. They will be at the J Arena, even if it's behind closed door and it's empty. But I just think that Cristiano is in such great form, as we saw in the league. I think 16 goals in the last 11 league matches. And really where they know that to make sure that they can win and retain the title once again, they'll have to step up now between now and the end of the season, especially with all the doubt over what would happen between now and the rest of the season with Serie A, and the league might be suspended as well. That's what Damiano Tomasi, the head of the Players Association in Italy, has asked for tonight. So I will go for Juve.
Meanwhile, in England, Manchester United taking on Manchester City at Old Trafford. United are 4-1 to get the win. City big favourites, 8-5 on. Stephen?
Wow. I'm going to go City. 4-2. I mean, listen, there's no question that if Manchester City turn up and play the kind of football we know they're capable of and play the way they did the last time they went to Old Trafford, then this is a City victory.
Jules, who have you got?
I go for City as well. But this season, the away team has always won. You know, obviously Old Trafford in the League Cup, City won, and at the Etihad, United won both in the League Cup and in the league. I just still think City have so much momentum since the winner in Madrid in the Champions League that they will win that one.
At Stamford Bridge, meanwhile, Chelsea taking on Everton. Intrigued to get your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I think Chelsea will win this one. I'm not too keen on Everton. I know they've been climbing the table and getting results, but they don't excite me.
Right.
And for me, Calvert-Lewin takes too many chances to score goals. I think Chelsea will win this game.
Jules?
I'll go for a draw. I mean, Carlo coming back to Stamford Bridge and playing against Lampard, his former player. I think he's got them well organised and well drilled, and I think they can go there and get a point.
Meanwhile, in Spain, Real Betis taking on Real Madrid. Real Madrid looking to go back to the top of the table. 5-4 on to get the win. Real Betis at 3-1. Stevie?
Absolutely. I'm going with the bookies here.
Really?
I don't really see how they don't win this game. You know, they haven't been quite at their best, but they've been good enough.
Mm.
And if they're good enough to beat Barca, they're good enough to beat Betis.
Jules?
I go for a draw. I think it'll be tough for Madrid at the Villamarín. And even if Betis haven't won in the last, I think, 7 in all competition, they will make it tough. They will make it tough. And I think they've got enough players to play with the ball and to trouble this Real Madrid defence, who I still think, despite the win in the Clásico, are still not yet at their best.
We'll, of course, be looking back at all those big games and a lot more on the next edition of the show. Be sure to join us. MLS continues here this weekend. Portland Timbers taking on Nashville. That game live on ESPN tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern. Really interesting stuff from Sebastian Legette talking about his time with Zlatan Ibrahimovic at the Galaxy, saying there's definitely been a better feel around the place for sure. In the dining area, no one sat with him ever on the field. You couldn't be free. It was super frustrating. You feel like you want to literally take your boots off and just walk off the field. It's tough to play against him, and it's tougher to play with him. And inevitably, they asked him about this incident, of course, that went viral. Zlatan pushing into the side, out of the wall. This is what Legette had to say about that in that game against LAFC. That, to me, is complete insanity. To do that to one of your teammates, complete insanity. It's one of those moments I think he shows his true colours. Jules, obviously PSG at a different level, but did you hear similar stories from when Zlatan was there?
Never to that level. I remember talking a lot to some of the players, and even recently to Serge Aurier, and Aurier was saying you have to earn his respect. You have to earn Zlatan respect. If you don't, then things can get a bit difficult for you, and at times he can maybe feel a bit like a bully sometimes. But if you earn his respect, and you could do that, you know, at training or in your relationship with him, in the dressing room, whatever ways. But then I think you're fine. And maybe when he was in MLS and at the Galaxy, he was maybe a bit more patronizing, a bit more condescending. I'm not sure than when he was in Europe. But certainly there's that in him. He's a strong personality. He's got that strong character. And he's the boss everywhere he goes. That's the way he behaves. And either you go with him and it's probably easier for you. And if you're not in the circle or in the gang, then as we saw with those quotes, it can get very difficult.
All hail to Zlatan. You've got to earn his respect. I mean, that's ridiculous. You automatically, when you go into a dressing room, should treat everybody with respect. And you know what? You'll get it back. And that's exactly the reason he's getting criticised, is because he didn't show this guy or anybody else respect. Why do you think nobody was sat next to him in the dining room? What does that tell you? So
you got no problem with Legette's comments here?
No, not at all.
Well, that's interesting. I thought you might say, oh, he's a crybaby. Zlatan's a great player. You've got to learn from him.
No, not at all. Not at all. He's clearly disrespected. Maybe not everybody, if anybody actually did earn his respect.
Right.
But you can't do that in a dressing room. Think you're the almighty and everybody else has to all hail to you. That's not for me. Maybe that's why he's had so many clubs in so many years, by the way.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. This one could actually come from Stevie, but we know he's no longer on Twitter. It's for you, Jules. And the question is, how much are they paying Jules to listen to Gab talk for the entire podcast?
A lot of money. Very expensive. I mean, on Friday morning, we gave a little talk at the Disney office in Hammersmith in London. And we were together and we had all those people in front of us, and Gab took for, I don't know, 80% of the time and me 20% of the time, and he was just like, he kept moving and he could not stand still. It was so funny. And it's, I said this, the same in the podcast. At the beginning, we were supposed to share everything, and now it's like, you know, that's the way it is. You know, I still love it.
He's like an unstoppable train, isn't
he? You listened to it for the first time, didn't you, this week?
I was listening to it. I was driving somewhere during the week and it came on.
Yeah.
And I started chuckling to myself, because the only person I heard was Gab. And actually, Sid was meant to be on it.
Right.
And it's the Gab and Jules Post, and I'm thinking, podcast. I'm thinking, why is it called the Gab and Jules podcast? Because I can only hear Gab.
Gab and friends, basically, isn't it?
Gab and me.
Stevie, why are people trying to blame Jose's playing star when he's missing all of his attacking options?
Did you see them before he lost them?
Yes, but surely now, he can only judge in on what he's doing now.
There's no difference when he had them to when he lost them. Is there? I can't see.
But they were averaging 2 goals a game before they lost him. That average has dipped now, apparently.
2 goals a game. I'll tell you what. The way they play the game is completely and utterly Mourinho of the last, 6, 7 years? There's no flair to it at all.
Right.
There's no excitement to it. And, of course, he makes it even worse. He makes you want to go against him. Blames every single thing apart from himself, including his players, which, in my opinion, for any coach, is a complete and utter no-no. If you're going to criticise your players, you do it in the dressing room or behind closed doors or in the training field. You don't do it in front of a group of press men. That's not on.
Did Stevie enjoy the quick throw-in from Trent today?
Which one was
it? I don't know. Just the throw-ins in general.
I never even noticed.
Oh.
I must have forgotten about the throwing coach. Because usually, when I think about it, I shout it at the telly.
Moving on to a similar subject, does Stevie believe he's always right? If he does, let him know he's right about 25% of the time, and I'm being generous.
Is that the wife? Is that my wife? Do you know what? I actually do think I'm right until somebody proves me I'm wrong. And,
right.
And then I am absolutely, I have no problem eating humble pie.
No? So I've done that to you on occasion.
Yes.
You swear at me, call me something rude, and then we move on.
Yes. Who is it, by the way?
I don't know.
What's his name?
Love football. What? That's on the other side. What is Stevie's favourite Anfield memory?
Oh,
surely has plenty, but we want number one.
That's impossible. That's impossible, Dan. I'll tell you what, I'll give you one. I scored a diving header in the Merseyside derby at the Kop End. Right in the top corner. Went whizzing past Neville Southall from across.
Right.
Fantastic.
I bet that feeling.
Ah. Oh. I've got a picture of it in the house.
Oh, really?
Fantastic. But that's only one of them.
The debut must have been special as well. Your first game at Anfield?
That's different because, I'm sure most players will tell you that the debut at a place like Liverpool, when you're young, You don't remember much about it.
Right, just don't make a mistake.
Just don't make a mistake. So I can barely remember it. But once you get settled and once you're in there,
yeah,
then you're able to kind of open things up and take everything in.
George, you're going to be at Anfield, of course, for the Atleti game at the same time that PSG are playing Dortmund. What a schoolboy error that was from you.
I didn't choose to go. But it might not be a bad thing. You know, I'll be engrossed in my Liverpool Atletico Madrid and preparing for a post-match interview, that kind of stuff, pre-match right. stuff. Not thinking too much that PSG once again will be knocked out early, and that once again people are going to take the mick out of me, and once again I'm going to feel deflated.
Final one. Leipzig against Spurs. Predictions.
Oof.
Both struggling. Jules?
I think Leipzig will go through. I think they'll win. They'll win 2-1. 2-1, 3-1 on aggregate. Timo Werner started on the bench today and came on. Dani Olmo came on as well. They'll be back in the starting lineup, I think, on Tuesday night. And I think they'll do it.
It's hard to come up. They've had a bad calendar year, though, haven't they? Leipzig have not been good.
Have you seen Tottenham?
Well, I know Spurs aren't good.
There you go. I mean, if you think, give me one reason why Tottenham can beat Leipzig in Leipzig. I can't think of one.
Right.
In fact, the only thing I can think of is last year in the Champions League, how the couple of games, how they got to the final with, like, the City one, for example.
Right.
Ajax.
Yeah.
I mean, just from absolutely nowhere, down and out, something happened. The soccer gods, as I always call them.
Right.
But that's what
they're
praying for.
Never heard you call them that in your life.
Oh, you didn't read my book.
No.
You told me you read my book. And you
as many do.
Because it says it in it.
Many times, is it?
If it's once, I've said it before. It doesn't have to be many times.
I've never heard you say that on this show before. The soccer gods.
Well, you've heard it, though.
That's it. Right, thank you very much. That is us. We will be back tomorrow with our soccer gods reviewing big games, isn't it? Manchester Derby, Juve against Inter, Chelsea, Everton. Be sure to join us.